Hey, Sam.
Hey Sam, how are you?
Good. You?
Hey Sam.
Hey Sam,
How are you?
I'm doing good. I am Sam Carey,
I'm Sam Simo.
and this is Good You Therapy.
Yes, I am sitting on the floor in my bedroom trying to get cozy. I think the
One day
bed's too
we'll
high.
have a big fancy recording studio, but today is not the
It ain't today.
day. So today is the day that we are going to talk about ruptures and repairs.
Tell me what that's all about, Sam.
What is that? What does that mean? So, we're going to talk today about like what a rupture is in a relationship, how that kind of shows up in therapeutic relationships, the importance of repairs and what repairs might look like, and then what kind of happens if you don't get the chance to make a repair? What do we do with that?
And so what would a rupture look like in the therapy process, but also what it looks like in our everyday lives.
Yes.
So, I love to be able to not, I love the repair part, obviously, but I think the biggest piece with ruptures and repairs is being able to show your client that where the willingness and what accountability looks like and what healing looks like, what repairing looks like, because ruptures happen in our day to day. That could be arguments between you and your partner, you and your friend, you and your family member. And it really is just about like a disconnection.
Yeah, I think about I forget what the Instagram account is. I think it's The Secure Relationship on Instagram, and they do
Ooh.
lots of really awesome what do you call it? Animation, drawings, pictures of like secure attachment, insecure attachment, and like anxious and avoidant attachment, and kind of the dynamics between those. And we talk about ruptures a lot, and so if you think about it from the Gottman perspective, it's thinking about like if someone reaches out with a bid for connection and it doesn't get met, that can cause a rupture. And it's not always like a fight, right? It's not always like I'm mad at you and you're mad at me. It can happen like you say something jokingly and I take it to heart and it's a rupture. Or it could be you don't tell me something, and it could be something little like you tell me you can't record one night, you don't tell me why, and then I see you post it on Instagram, right? Like that can cause a rupture of like trust. It doesn't have to be this big, massive thing. It can be this little bitty thing that just causes like a shift in the relationship in what feels like a more negative way.
I like that we're talking about the small pieces of it too, because we are thinking, when we think argument, we can sometimes think of these big disconnections and even something as simple as having the wrong reaction to something someone's telling you.
Yeah.
Like having the wrong facial reaction, you know?
So as a person who falls more on the probably more on the anxious attachment end of the spectrum, and having a mother and husband who are much more on the avoidant attachment, my mom and I used to fight so much as kids because she would say something and I'd be like, "You said it mean," or whatever, and she would literally get so annoyed with me and say, "It's just my face, Samantha. It's literally just my face. Like this is just what I look like." And I'm like, "Ah!" And those ruptures happened all the time though, and it's funny because now that like I'm older and I can be a little less egocentric than I was as a teenager, I can like say, "Okay, that's just what your face looks like." But even now, even as like leaning towards 30, I I still have moments of like taking it to heart, you know?
Yeah. I'm the avoidant.
Maybe that's why we work so well together.
And what is it about avoidance and anxious attachments that draw so closely together? Actually,
we should do a whole episode on that.
We should. Let's save that. let's save that content. But yeah, exactly. With those little pieces. So I think how sometimes when someone's intention is to be like super helpful in some situations, it can, like, their facial expression or their tone can come up as like condescending.
Mm-hmm.
And that little rupture there, right? Or we think of maybe professors or teachers who may call you out in front of the whole class, and that ruptures that comfortability and safety in the classroom.
Yeah. And I think ruptures can happen even in a context of, like, I think about how politically charged things are right now. Well, I was going to go down the political route, but I'll give you a couple of examples. So I'm thinking about, like, how politically charged things are, right? What I find is that oftentimes people who lean really far on either side of the spectrum make a lot of assumptions. And so it's really funny because I'll be talking to someone and they'll just throw this very, like, far left or far right thing at me as it, and they're like, you know, right? And I'm thinking, you have no idea what, like, I have given. You might take context clues that you're making assumptions about, but, like, you, I have given no definitive evidence as to where I fall on that spectrum, and you're making a lot of assumptions. And sometimes that causes ruptures for me, in particular when it comes to, you know, we're in the South. There's a lot of, like, homophobia and transphobia, and I've found that there have been many times that people will make comments and mean so, like, not bad, but they're like, oh, well, that person's gay. I'm like, okay, well, what's the problem with that? You know, and it's funny because, like, that is, like, the population that I really focus on, you know? And so it's a space that I feel really passionate about. And so people make assumptions because I'm married to a man and we live in the South that I'm going to share the same views as them. And I think that those are some ruptures that I find happening quite often that are really not, you wouldn't necessarily think that would be, I don't know. We make a lot of assumptions is my point. And those assumptions can cause ruptures in very, like, small ways that, like, and if I don't say anything, then they never know.
Or it's huge ruptures with politics, to be honest. Politics, religion, what else is on the big scheme of things? Like, financial pieces, humanitarian views, like
relationship ideas of what, like, the relationship looks like and the rules behind those.
Yes. Just our values being threatened or hurt. Go back and listen to core values. To understand that piece as well. But the point of this is that ruptures happen almost day to day, right? And it could be, I mean, ruptures, and also they don't matter as much for some relationships, right? So let's say a stranger cuts you off on the road. Like, that's, I don't know who that person is. It's not going to affect my future relationship with this person, right? There's no, I'm not repairing it because they have sped off and have gotten off at the next exit. Like, they're doing their own thing. But when it comes to our personal relationships, and as counselors, our relationships with our clients, and as a client, our relationship with our counselors, it's important to be able to be open when a rupture happens, and especially more so on the counselor than on the client. If we notice it, we will bring to light. That's our responsibility. But if we don't know, and if our client doesn't say, then we don't have the chance to repair. And it makes sense too that we don't always say, because guess what? We have painful past experiences where, when we have brought to light a rupture, what happens?
Gaslight.
I was just kidding. You were making it a big deal. That's so
You're
dramatic.
so sensitive. Why do you make everything about
God.
you?
God, that just gave me full body chills. Don't ever.
Yeah. Or like, yeah, no, I'm not even gonna get into it because I don't know who's listening and I'm not going
Eye
down that
rolls,
road.
eye rolling. You know what I mean? Like, that's where that non those nonverbals just by your reaction and your face can say a lot. So yeah, we have people with painful past experiences coming in, and there's fear there. There's fear that I feel so safe and comfortable in this relationship. A rupture happens, and now I'm at this point of, do I tell my counselor that this is how this made me feel, or do I just let it go and avoid it like maybe I do with outside relationships? Because I'm afraid that what if I find out that my counselor is going to react like somebody in my past has? That's a
And
valid fear.
it is, and it's so freaking important that on the therapist side that we do our own work, right? Because when people point out something that we've done wrong, like that can be such a trigger button, and that can be such a like, oh man, and internalize shame and take that on and make that about us. And it's like, you gotta own it because regardless of what your intention was or how it was, if it was misconstrued or whatever, like you have to own that that experience that that client had happened that way for them. And you can, I definitely like, for me, when I bring up a rupture with someone, like I want to hear what's going on for them because I've gotten to a point through a lot of work in my own therapy of like my therapist and I, like, what are the stories that you're telling yourself? Because at the end of the day, like we make up stories in our head, right? Like when something happens, we fill in the blanks, we make assumptions. That's what our brain does to keep us safe. And in doing so, we're saying, well, they think this about me and they're doing this because of this, you know, like, but the thing that's really cool is when you get the chance to hear that other person's perspective and being totally honest and transparent is really hard. It's really hard. And so sometimes it's easier to deny or to minimize or invalidate when someone comes at you with that.
Yeah, because it's uncomfortable. Okay, so let's flip the piece there, right? So we're talking about how the client might come in and now they're having this dilemma of, do I tell my counselor because of my painful past experiences? Well, on the other end, we also can come from painful past experiences where we get absolutely nailed down if we did something wrong. Right. And maybe we weren't able to defend ourselves, even if we were innocent of actions, right? And or if that intention wasn't our intention, and that was and look, that's something we'll talk about too, intention versus impact in a second, right? But when we're young and we have the best intentions and it doesn't come out that way, there sometimes we don't get the grace for that, right? Immediately we're like the villain. And so that trigger point that you were kind of talking about, of that we need to do our own work and make sure that we can feel like the healthiest person in the room, and being able to take that accountability of, hey, like we're human. We might not have meant that, but that's how it was taken. And that's the most important piece. We don't w that doesn't make us a bad person. That doesn't make us have bad or ill intent. That just means that we made a mistake. We are not mistakes. We made a mistake.
Yeah. I love that. We are not a mistake. We made a mistake.
My favorite thing to tell my clients.
Yeah. Because it's so easy to personalize actions. And if someone does something bad, they're a bad person, right? And I mean, that just goes to, we've talked about that in the, when we talked about emotions and how like emotions are inherently neutral, but we assign meaning to them. And I think we want to put people in boxes of good or bad, but like the reality is we all have good and bad in us. Yeah.
Wow. Yep.
Kind of like when we think about like anxious attachment, we all have anxious and avoidant like pieces of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or like in EFT, like with pursuers and withdrawers in couples, we all have pieces of each, but you know, and also like some of the best people in the world have done things that, like, if you look at from this angle, are bad, you know? And
yeah,
it's all so, it's so subjective.
I was just about to say, yeah, it's that, you know, that, that picture on the internet that goes around where one person's, they're facing each other, and on the ground in front of them is a 6 to one person and a 9 to the other person, right? Well, for certain people, what you said as a counselor in session or did might not have impacted them, might not have even given a second thought, right? Like, maybe we do it for a majority of our clients. We say something, but for one client, that hit a nasty trigger for them, and they called that out. Okay, guess what? No one's the same, and that doesn't mean you impacted that negatively for all the other clients that you've done that with. But now we can be mindful about, okay, well, and be curious, like, what about this, you know, brought that, like, what triggered that feeling, right? Because now we can also dive into where that came from for that person, and create healing there. But also, hey, maybe we can change our wording in certain ways. Like, we can grow from this feedback, you know?
Yeah, and I think that goes into like the intent impact. But I'm thinking about like what, like, wording can be so particular person to person, because my therapist talks about like narratives, and he used the word like illusion. And for the longest, I was like, no, we are not, I'm not crazy, I'm not delusional, I'm not having illusions. But it, and we changed that to story, right? Like, that felt better. But he was saying the same thing. Like, we create narratives in our heads, right? And that's what he was getting at. But like, that word for me was just like, no, 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 I'm not crazy, I'm not, you know? And so certain wording for a singular client might have a completely different impact than its intent. And like, it's all informed by the experience that that client has had.
Yes. Like, and you don't, you just, there's nothing, just like, okay, let's say we have a client that we've been working with for a long time. Okay. We still only know the most minuscule piece of their entire existence. Even if they're telling us every bit of trauma, every hurt, every pain that they've experienced, we still only know such a little piece. And maybe they don't even know that something bothered them until it triggered in counseling.
Yeah.
Only one way to find out.
It's so funny. I love thinking about therapy as like, we're unpacking boxes, right? And you might know what's in some of the boxes. You might know what's in some of the boxes. Your counselor might have an idea of what's in some of the boxes. And then some boxes you're just opening and it is just flying out.
Some boxes are labeled kitchen and it has photos in it. Like, some boxes say living room and it's got the gym equipment in it. Like,
some boxes don't have labels and are full of like snakes and spiders and scary things. So I think that recognizing, but okay. So the kind of transition from rupture to repair and thinking about intent and impact is, in order to repair, like, the repair can't be 100% on one person. I feel like most of the time.
100%.
Because we have to be willing to take into account the intent. That doesn't excuse it. That doesn't, but like, there's a difference if you trip and fall and headbutt somebody, or if you grab somebody's face and you smash your head into it, right? Like, those are different.
That's the intentional thing.
Even if they both result in your broken nose, right?
Yeah.
So we have to ignite, like, for a repair to happen, the person who like initiated the rupture, I guess, has to be open to hearing that and saying, oh my gosh, like, I see why that would be painful for you. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
And the other person has to be willing to say, okay, I see where you're coming from. And it doesn't have to happen exactly like that, but
or just acknowledge that this person is taking, like, okay, this was not their intention, right? Like, okay, I can see, like,
I'm still hurt.
I'm still hurt. And they didn't mean to hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
And they still took accountability for hurting me.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, repairs are hard. And I'm thinking back to a recent repair of between friends where I'm like, you know, I'm feeling this way and I'm feeling really frustrated about this. I really want to know what your experience of this whole ordeal was, and being fully prepared to be gaslit and then having that beautiful moment of, wow, I totally didn't even think about that, but I can 100% see how you were hurt by that. And I'm really sorry.
Yep.
Beautiful.
And see,
chef's kiss.
See, that's what I love about anxious attachment, right? Because you are one that will initiate that conversation. And my own pain to bear is that I will be like, you know, they probably didn't mean it. It's fine. It's fine. What? And I'll make excuses for people all the time. But within my own journey, I've been doing better.
Yeah, you have.
I have definitely, Sam knows, have been doing much better with that. And not that me and Sam got in a rupture yet. I mean, who knows? I know. So for a client I had, I guess I'm just going to dive into this one because I can't remember what I was going to say beforehand. And now I'll just dive into this piece. But I had a client who came in and was talking about, I actually think I cut this out of last episode so I could save it for this episode. Was talking about something with schools, like wanting to know more information about this school. Mm-hmm. And I did not have any information on this. I didn't want to assume information. I didn't, you know, I wanted to be able to help and learn more about it before I spoke on anything, or like, because it was a lot of needing guidance piece too for that. And so I basically said, like, let me, you know, dive into a little, like, look into this. I can ask my supervisor about this and then I'll get back to you about it next, when we meet next week. And then I basically like moved on by saying, like, what is it that you'd like to talk about in today's session? Like, you know, because at that point I just kind of felt stuck, right? And then I could tell the vibe like totally changed. And I probably like 5 or 10 minutes in, I was like, hey, like, you know, I'm noticing the vibes are off. Vibes are a little off. It's something happened. And she said, I feel like you dismissed me. Well, like, sweet baby, 15 or 16 year old client. And I was like, and of course that piece where Sam was like, check yourself in that moment. Like, I felt terrible. Like, right. Like, who wouldn't feel terrible? You're already, we have imposter syndrome as counselors, like immediately.
I'm like, but we're in this healing profession.
Yes.
And like, you felt like there was harm.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And like, you dismissed me, like, flat out that piece. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I am so sorry. I was like, you are absolutely right. I did. And that was not my intention. And I said that doesn't mean that did not hurt, you know, that wasn't impactful. I said, let's continue talking about that piece. I did say that I had felt that I didn't know enough information to talk on it, but that didn't mean that we couldn't have spoke more about what that meant for you. And so I'm sorry that I dismissed that. And the rest of the session was amazing. Like, amazing. And when I thought back to it, where that piece, where that heart pain came from, from that piece, what I believe anyway, was that I know that she had struggled, like her mom kind of dismissing some of the things that she talks about, right? And so to use that word and create repair in the same breath, that moved us so quickly. Now, the same client, when learning that I was leaving, that was another rupture, yeah. Right? And I had been working with that client for a year. But the point is, like, that created such a beautiful part of that therapeutic rapport where we were able to create trust that expanded past the trust we already had in there. So that was so yeah. cool.
The repair moments are so nice. And like personally and professionally, you know,
yeah,
there's that, what is it? It's the Japanese art.
I know you're looking at me for help.
I'm looking at you to help me. The Japanese gold art where they, kintsugi, which is where they repair broken pottery by using gold to fix it so that it becomes an even more beautiful piece. And that break becomes like a part of what makes it beautiful.
I've seen that.
Mm-hmm. Tyler got us kits to do it and we haven't done it yet. We're getting it's so like a ceramic fun. Bowl and you can break it and then it's got the gold, like it's not actual gold, but it's like gold glue to put it back together. And it's
we should bring that to a rage room.
Rage rooms are really fun. I listen to our episode on Anchor, talk more about rage rooms because they're amazing.
We are our own ads, but
we're not making any money off of this either, you guys. Just in case anybody's wondering, anytime we mention stuff, like nobody's giving us money. No, we do not have enough listeners for people to care about giving us money right now.
Not that. Also, just want to add to that, not that we would take any ads or any money from anything we wouldn't agree with either, by the way.
Yeah.
Like there are certain podcasts that have a certain ad that I will never, ever, ever have on here. And Sam already knows.
Oh, yeah. No, I know.
And it will never happen. I don't care. There's not enough money. Not okay. Anyway, money. Continue.
Yeah. So just know this is our pledge to integrity of only supporting things that we like.
Yeah.
But yeah. Oh, I just remembered that I was supposed to send something to a client and it's just now hitting me.
Dude,
oops.
Story of our life on this podcast.
It's like, yeah. Anyway.
That happened to me last episode.
But yeah, so thinking about the repair though is like, even though it's uncomfy to have the break and even the actual repair process can be mm-hmm. uncomfortable, like super duper. I'm just thinking back to that last repair of like the level of like vomit worthy anxiety I felt leading up to it. But man, it can be so beautiful. And I'll also say, like, if you're having a rupture and trying to repair, the person that I repaired with was another therapist. So, like,
oh, well, that, yeah, that's very helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. So, being friends with a lot of therapists, I don't take that as like the norm, because I think that we're not socialized to admit when we're wrong. We're not socialized to just show up blatantly, like, hey, without even being prompted, like, I know I did something. I know I hurt your feelings. I said something I didn't mean, or how it came out wrong. You know, like, we're not, most of us are not taught that. Admitting weakness, admitting fault. So it kind of goes against a lot of socialization to do that. And so that's something that, like, through our training and through our own experience and hopefully through personal growth, like a lot of the friends that I've cultivated in the therapy world can do.
Mm-hmm.
Super thankful and grateful for. But I know that when I try to do that with like my family or like people that have not worked on themselves, it often goes the way that I was prepared for it to go. Gaslight, gaslight,
yeah. And we have gaslighting, we have defensiveness, we have avoidance, we have excusing. Like, there are plenty of ways that this can show up. It could also be stonewalling, like the silent treatment. We
Denial.
deny, just yeah, denial, denial, the river in
The
Egypt.
river in Egypt.
Yes, just listen. What, and you know, I work so often with clients on how to communicate and have different difficult conversations because so often when we're approached about something that we did that we don't feel good about, or that again, maybe it wasn't our intention, and we don't know how to deal with that icky feeling of feeling bad, just like that. When that client said I was dismissive, like that felt really crappy, like to know that I did that and caused someone to feel that way. So that's anyone who's being defensive, anyone who's pushing that away, that's that they're pushing away an icky feeling that they're experiencing. Doesn't excuse it, doesn't excuse that pushing away, because again, that accountability piece is such a major piece for repair. Huge.
Yeah. Like I said, the repair is really a two-way street. Like both people have to be willing to like wiggle and give a little bit, right? And so that makes repairs hard with people that you don't trust. It makes repairs hard with people that you don't have a relationship with. It makes repairs hard. And I'm just laughing because you and I often talk about like our experience of like having a more anxious attachment style and a more avoidant attachment style. And it's something, and I think we've talked a little bit about neurodivergence and our like experience with neurodivergence. And I just think about the struggle of when repairs can't happen. Existential crisis. When we don't have that opportunity, when that other person is unwilling to like talk about it or deal with it, or they do deny or invalidate, or you
And
know, they
no
do have
therapy
those.
technique is going to help.
So how do we, what do we do? What do you do with that when you try to make a repair or you just
Are
don't
you
have the
asking the
opportunity?
avoidant, or are you asking?
I'm asking the avoidant, Samantha.
Well, it's kind of in the name. But it depends. Obviously, it depends on who this person is in my life, right? Because if it's a family member, if it's like a close family member, some things, like sometimes we got to choose our battles. And if it's if it's a acquaintance, right? If it's like a maybe we're kind of becoming like friends, like, and there's a rupture and that bit of defense, like I'm at a point in my life where I think that I need that reciprocated willingness to repair. And if that's not happening, then that's okay with me to keep a distance, and I can give myself that permission. Because we don't have to be around someone who never takes accountability. And again, that just depends on you. That doesn't mean you have to be around family members. Like, I'm saying that I will pick my battles in certain areas. And then sometimes I do tend to create more space. It really depends.
Yeah. I think I really struggle with wanting closure and wanting to like sew things up and tie things up with a nice little bow.
Yes.
And it's actually been a really big theme lately of like when we made a joke about it, but we'll talk about it more in another episode about like anxious and avoidant and being an anxiously attached person. Two things are kind of coming up thinking about it. Like, one is I so often find myself drawn to more avoidant people. Like, I think about my close group of friends. There's probably like maybe like six women that I'm really close with. And I think there's only one that's like super anxiously attached, but even her in a friendship, she's more on the like kind of avoidant spectrum. And so I'm just like, what is up with this? Where I'm just like so close with people who are so avoidant, and it's just hilarious. But I think that that's a thing. So it gives me a lot of anxiety trying to connect, but not overwhelm people and give people space, and like how much space, and trying to just navigate those little nuances of the differences, because I want to be more secure in my relationships and trust that people are going to come and go as they wish. But it's hard. And then the second thing that comes up is like when I don't get closure. And I find myself spinning my wheels of what do I need to do in order to get the opportunity to have the closure that I want? What do I need to do to get this person to listen to me or hear me out? And it's like, nothing. You can do nothing. They are not interested. But it's hard because I find myself getting stuck in those spaces of really wanting, even if it's just like a, if they just want to say like F you, like that's fine. I just hate
That gives
not the
me the closure,
ambiguity.
right?
And I think
Basically.
a lot of times as an anxiously attached person in like friendships and in relationships, it feels like it always falls on me to be the one to initiate a repair. You know? And so then I get mad, and then the resentment builds up, and I hate that.
I'm trying.
Thankfully, we've been pretty. I think my attachment style in friendships is leaning more towards secure because I've cultivated friendships with people who are super open. And if I do bring something up, they're like, yes, let's talk about it right now. Let's get through this. That's my bad. And then we just like come to a discussion about it and move on, and it's cool.
And that takes
But
time.
it does. So we were just talking about like how cultivating friendships that are more open with the communication flow makes it easier to develop secure attachments.
Yes.
And it's really a practice. And
Oh
it's
gosh, yeah. So ruptures, repairs. The biggest part, I think, with what we were discussing too before talking about the how we got to not getting closure, right? Was that piece of we don't know how the other person is going to react. So a big part of that counseling piece, like we don't just sit and talk to our counselors or sit and listen to our clients. Like we are actively working side by side to, teach tools and also see how those tools work with each person, because sometimes not every tool fits in every hand, right? And a lot of communication pieces when we talk about I statements. I would love to do an episode on difficult conversations, actually. I love talking about difficult conversations because that and boundaries go so hand in hand. Like, and that's another part of rupture. It's like when your boundaries get overstepped, right? And like boundaries were early in the episodes, probably like my third episode. But I love talking about boundaries. We all have the right to our boundaries, our values, all these pieces and our feelings, and we have the right to be able to advocate for ourselves to the people we love and say like, hey, like that was a boundary cross for me, and we have the right to have that person care to not want to do that again.
Yeah, that's the big thing is choosing relationships with people who are willing to step into the discomfort and make the repairs. Because, and that's not to say like if you don't get a repair one time, like screw it all, you know, but relationships do require like they're a two-way street.
Yeah, they are. I
And
always, oh, go on.
I was just gonna say, and so are repairs.
And
So.
so are repairs. I always tell my clients, and honestly, my friends, anyone who talks about arguments that, and talking about the repair piece is there's always two people that can apologize after an argument. Always. Because if it's an argument, that means that there were two people arguing, right? If it's one person yelling at another person, that's not an argument. You know what I'm saying? So if we were actively involved in that, we can, and we might not have quote unquote started it. It does, don't nitpick those pieces. Like, we're human. We've all started an argument, right? And sometimes I think the hardest times that I can think of back in like for repair are the times where I feel like such a jerk. And that's the hardest piece. It's not that I don't want to say, like, I'm sorry for how, like, I'm almost way more mad at myself in that moment. And that's that almost causes a need for a repair within myself.
Yeah, that's that shame piece.
Huge.
Yeah, the shame that comes with like really hurting someone that we care about can be. And that's the thing, is it takes courage. It takes courage to repair, and it takes the willingness to be uncomfortable, because you do have to look when you've done something wrong or hurtful. You have to look at that, and you have to be willing to like lean into that, right? And the heaviness and the weight and the guilt and the shame and the anger towards ourselves and like all of the complicated emotions that come when we do something really hurtful.
Yeah.
I think about working with clients around infidelity. It's one of my, I don't love that infidelity happens, but I love working with clients around infidelity, because especially partners who have strayed, because I think that there's so much. People think that someone cheats on their partner and they're just a monster and they're just a bad person and oh, screw them. It's so nuanced and it's so complicated, and there's so much pain in that. And especially when partners who strayed stay in the relationship and have worked to repair, the agony that is caused to the betrayed partner is also extreme. Like, you know, I did that whole presentation at the state conference about betrayal trauma. Yes, it was
fantastic.
Trauma. Big T trauma. Betrayal trauma is traumatic. Yes. And being the betrayer in that is also a traumatic experience, when you have to stare in the face of what you did, when you did something to hurt someone you love so much. And so I think that it takes a lot of courage for people to look what they've done in the face of the mistakes that they've made and the pain they've caused and be willing to try and make amends. I think that's so powerful.
Yeah, and then you're stuck in battling this disenfranchised piece of like, what, you have no right to be sad or feel bad because you're the one who caused all this. And that is, you know, that's one thing about social media. I mean, there's plenty of things of social media that I can that I could take a word on and take a piece on, but I get so sad seeing some comments when we immediately become like inhuman and not understanding and just jump on this person like we know exactly what kind of person they are. Now, listen, I can understand that some people do some really messed up things, and like for those comments, I might be just looking the other way because we can see some of that, right? But as simple as like today, I saw a video of a teacher in class, and I heard like a little kid, like a little baby, screaming their head off in the background. And the comments were like, God, why are kids so bad? Like, that's so embarrassing. I'm like, that is a baby, not an actual, like, it sounded like a preschooler. Like, what? They don't have any idea of embarrassment. Like, there's nothing to be embarrassed about. They're being a baby. They're being a child. Like, I feel like we jump so quickly to judge others. And I think a lot of that comes from how quickly we judge ourselves.
Yeah. And I think we make a lot of mistakes in that. And again, those ruptures. And I think something about social media that's so frustrating is that the things that people say on social media. And I try to be really mindful about what we say on here, right? Like,
Yes.
the things that we say on social media, like, who, if you're talking about like that little kid and their parents may never see that you said something, but like, if you're saying something on Facebook, it's going to pop up. Oh, look, my friend commented on this video when I see it, right? Like, the people that know you are going to see that. You know, and that I even go back to like the political thing. There was, I don't do like arguments on social media. Like, I don't, I will not. Listen, I'm exhausted. I argue with myself all the time. I don't got no time to be fighting with people over stupid shit. And you're not going to change my mind. I'm not going to change your mind. That's fine.
Yeah.
But it was way back when the Black Lives Matter movement was really like picking up speed. Mm-hmm. And again, for those of you listening, like, we're in South Louisiana. You have ideas about the political climate here. One of my mom's old friends had shared a thing about defunding the police when that idea was first started kind of circulating. And she was like, I'm genuinely curious because I don't really understand. She's very like middle of the road, just the sweetest lady ever. I was like, I'm really curious, like, what this means. Like, what do people think about this on both sides? Like, I want to get more information because I don't understand it and I don't have thought on it because I don't know. And I just start reading through comments as one does when doom scrolling. And
why would you do that to yourself?
Because and it was one of those things, because I had done a lot of research on it and like, sure, what that movement meant, and like I had a lot of thoughts and feelings about it, right? And this woman commented on the post,
oh God,
and said, well, anybody that thinks that we should defund the police, we're going to go ahead and give all of the pedophiles and rapists and murderers their addresses, and then we can defund the police. And I will be completely transparent. I opened my keyboard warrior mouth, and I wasn't ugly. I just said, I am absolutely horrified.
Appalled.
That you think that because someone has a different opinion of you.
Not even. You, she was curious.
Well, it wasn't. She wasn't saying it to the lady. She was just saying, I think this is what I think. I think if you think we should defund the police, that we should send all the rapists and murderers and pedophiles to your house.
Got it.
And so I said, I'm horrified that you feel comfortable putting out in public, because this is a public post on social media,
yeah,
that if someone disagrees with you, that they should be raped, murdered, and their children should be sexually assaulted. That is horrifying to me.
Yeah.
Regardless of if you think it should happen or not, I am horrified that you feel comfortable typing that and putting that out into social media. And they ended up deleting the entire post when I commented on that, because one of my other friends jumped in and was very much more aggressive than I was. But I was just like, I'm not going to fight with you. I'm so far removed from the, like, the political conversation. Yeah. I'm just like, the stuff I...
Yeah.
When the
no,
when
people
the
do put that.
Like, especially when it's attacking something I believe in, I don't care enough to try to change someone's mind to like engage with the nasty. But when that happens, I just want to say, like, it, like, somebody said something about putting a bullet in between a liberal's eyes and how they would love to do that. And I don't remember if I actually sent it or not, but I had typed up a message. It was someone I've known since I was a little girl, and I wanted to be like, would you shoot me in the head because I think something different than you? Like, that's the thing to me. It's like the dehumanization that happens.
We don't think.
And that's a rupture. Those ruptures happen. We put shit out and we don't even think about it because we're not looking at people like humans. Like, you and I recording this right now, we're looking at each other. And I think we have such good chemistry on this podcast because we're looking at each other, having a conversation.
Yes.
We're people. We're not just on the phone. We're not just like some voice or some typing thing. Like, we're actual human beings, and I think that it's really easy to get lost behind a screen in that.
Yeah, of course. And then we get a bunch of likes, and sometimes people enjoy the back and forth. They like the debate piece, right? Like, the thing with social media, and this is becoming more and more prominent as we go, is you can't just permanently delete and it go away. Like, before you deleted it, either we thought about it enough to delete it before someone saw it and we were really, really lucky, or it's too late. I like, maybe they didn't screenshot it and maybe they didn't download it, but they read it, they saw it, they experienced what we put out there. And, you know, there are definitely people who are like, I don't care how people, what kind of flavor I put in people's mouth. And you know what? That's totally, that's your prerogative. But at the same time, then we can't be questioning when there's so many ruptures in areas of our life, because the empathy is leaving when we can't even feel like we can empathize with people anymore. This is becoming a problem. Like, we can't understand what it's like to experience laws being placed against you in this world over and over and over again in this country. If we can't empathize with what that's like,
yeah,
to everywhere you turn, you're afraid of and not knowing who to trust with who you are as a person. Like,
yeah,
that's not, like, you, this is where you really want to choose carefully, because people will say these things and know that someone in their family identifies or loves somebody or has a child that is a part of that community identity, that those values. And
yeah,
dude, like, what's more important to you? The few likes you're gonna get on Facebook, or that relationship with your family member, friend, or partner?
Well, I think that a really strong tool that is used by the media on both sides is this, like, really just dehumanizing people and saying, like, if you're conservative, you're this, if you're liberal, you're this, and that's what you are, and you're not a person anymore, you're just this idea.
Yeah.
And if you believe this, then you're automatically completely in this category or that category. And we've lost so much of the humanness in politics and in social media and like just the stuff that people feel comfortable saying and putting out there, like talking about people like they are animals or monsters. And it's like, it's just, it really is horrifying. It really is horrifying. And it's unnecessary. And again, like you said, like, I might not fall into that category, but I probably love someone that does. I love a lot of people. I love a very weird lot of random assortment of human beings. And I feel very protective over the people that I love. And it also sucks, because I think the other thing that's happening as this, like, fear-mongering and as this, like, dehumanization is happening, is we're also becoming less and less willing to listen. And you use the word debate. People don't want to debate, like, the things that I'm talking about, like the two, like, examples
I just
used, that wasn't debates. That was like, I want you dead and I hope horrible things happen to you because you think differently. I'm like, do you even want to know why I think differently than you? Do you even want to, like, hear, like, what experience or education or connection that I've had that's changed my mind?
People don't. And the conversations you can get out of actually listening,
if everybody can go in just, like, loving and respecting each other and ask questions and, like, give evidence of, like, this is why I'm thinking and feeling this way, and, like, that's why this is really important to me, because I've watched people, I've worked with people who want it in their lives because they don't feel accepted, like, I'm really passionate about that. And so that could have been a huge, like, rupture, but we were able to have, like, a beautiful moment and, like, say, like, you know, while I still have my feelings about this thing, I can appreciate that you love people so much and that you want to protect people. I'm like, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, like, it, we just, and I don't know.
I know we've gotten so off, because, like, now we're talking about politics, and this will probably be one of the only times we, like, really dive into this piece in this podcast, because, like, besides the advocacy part, right, we're going to talk about that. But we're talking about politics a lot in here. But for both sides, the political spectrum, the only way that we are going to move forward and creating more of a connection is being open and willing to listen without judgment, be open-minded, and that's the biggest piece we can do. Like, if we're able to listen to people's personal stories, those are the biggest pieces. Like, you might not have come from this background, so you have little to no understanding of what that might be like. But also, we have people immediately jumping down the throats of people who grew up with these beliefs and know no different and think this is a really bad person when that's all they've ever known. And like, we should also be able and willing to have conversations and try and say, hey, like, this is where I'm coming from here, right? Like, both sides now want to completely erase the other.
We have to, there has to be like a breakdown of the dehumanization that happens. And like, people don't have to agree, but they're trying to control each other or other people's bodies and beliefs and like taking away freedoms like that. And so there's this balance of like, how do we fight and advocate? And I think that's what's happening. The fear mongering is happening on both sides because there's this idea that we have to fight and we have to stand up and it has to be this vicious onslaught to protect our rights. And like, I totally agree that like advocating and protesting and rallying has to happen. And I think in like our day-to-day life and our day-to-day interactions, if we go in like guns a-blazing, yeah, people are going to come in on the defense. If they come in guns a-blazing, we're going to go in on the defense, and somebody has to put the guns down and have
a conversation.
Like, yeah, and connect. That's what, like, we're trying to like fight it out, and like, I don't know. There are spaces that it has to be fought out. I struggle so much with figuring out where I fit into all that.
Yeah. And that's the beautiful point, Sam, is that you're not fully taking the point and diving in. Like, always be willing to question and reassess and not follow everything you're hearing, because
yeah,
people have goals for that, right? Like, big news stations, turn it off.
I don't watch any. I find like independent news sources because I am like horrified. And
do your research, read journal articles,
put down your phone and go connect with your neighbor.
Go, yes, hear people's backgrounds. Like, that's
seek out people that are different from you. Yeah. Seek out education from people who are different than you. Seek out supporting, especially if you're like a cis hetero white person. Like, seek out connection with things that are different than you, because it's so easy to become super egocentric, nationalistic, like, just like our in world is bubble. The only world that exists. Yeah, yeah, and it's not. And there's so much beauty and diversity and like, yeah, there's just so much in the world to see and learn and connect with. And yeah, we all have to find our balance and also stand up for what we believe in. But when I think about it, I think like, as far as like the political spectrum of like protesting and stuff, like, yes, there are spaces that there has to be fights. But when it comes to like other people, finding ways to like hold your boundaries, advocate for what's important to you, and be kind and be gentle and invite people in, because we're not gonna change people's minds by screaming at each other. We're not gonna learn by screaming at each other. Mm-hmm. What we're gonna learn, and the way we're gonna connect, and the way that we might find minds being changed, is by being curious and connecting and trying to find places to repair.
And it's uncomfy, and it's part of the process. And if this is something that is feeling like this might be hitting a place for you, like doing that research, do that part, like look outside of your usual places. But just know that, you know, this was not a planned conversation today.
No,
it wasn't. But I think this is a beautiful way to talk about where ruptures can happen. Because within the climate that we're in right now, there's been a lot of rupture, like Sam was saying, earlier, with just within families falling apart, friendships falling apart, partnerships falling apart. And, if we just learn how to connect in our own way, in a way that we can still keep that love and hold that and see that person as a person, in our life, and find that the piece of who makes them who they are. And, that's where we're going to grow as individuals too. And also being able to give ourselves that space and grace, and that we're really trying to grow and learn from repairs and ruptures. And, yeah, I hope that everyone enjoyed today's episode, and that, just like with ruptures in real life, if we ever say something on here that, feels like a rupture, please, we welcome that feedback. Please message us. We will definitely take in feedback account. And we know that some of the things that we say on here isn't going to make everybody happy, because, we are sharing some of our own values and beliefs, and that's we understand. When it comes, I was gonna say, when it comes to advocating for other humans and rights, that's not something that I'm willing to bend on. But I welcome hearing, if that is something that you want to provide feedback on, I'm still welcome to hearing it.
Yeah, that's kind of the direction that I was going of, like, I think that having a platform, if we're going to stand and use, if we're going to have a platform, I think that it's important for us to touch on things like that, because I don't want to take up space without talking about the things that are really important to me, and talking about, you know, the social justice pieces and the advocacy pieces, and also trying to find ways to do that where we can come together as a community. And I think Sam and I are both really passionate about advocating for other people and connecting with other people. And yeah, really appreciate, especially if you've stuck all the way through, like, all of that.
An hour and a half long episode. And I look forward to the future conversations that continue with this down the line, and that have come from this new episode, ideas of attachment and difficult conversations. And if anything else popped up for you while listening, again, we'd love some suggestions for topics at any point. And we just did our first giveaway before this recording, so congrats to Mary and Carrie for winning the new merch that we had, just a couple of fun things, a tote and a mug. But we hope that y'all enjoyed today's episode, and yeah, we'll see y'all next
you'll
week.
Hear from us next week.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bye. Disclaimer: Sam and Sam are provisional licensed professional counselors. This podcast may include opinions, experiences, and research-backed discussions. This podcast is not meant to diagnose or provide any mental health treatment. The purpose of this podcast is to encourage thoughtful discussions around mental health. If you are seeking mental health services, please reach out to a licensed professional in your state or country that can give you additional resources. Thank you for listening.